You listen to Brown Beret Radio. I'm right now interviewing Jesse Villarreal. Jesse Villarreal is the nephew of Rudy Cardenas, who back in 2004 was murdered by a local state trooper by the name of Michael Walker. Rudy has been working on this case for the last few years, and even before that has been involved in community activism. Since the recent cases of police brutality in the Bay Area and in Southern California, I've gotten the opportunity to talk with Jesse about his uncle's case and about what's been going on in his community. I'm right now at a local coffee shop, chopping it up. We've been talking for a few minutes, maybe about an hour, about what's been going on, and we want to definitely bring this information to the public, to show the public that these cases of police brutality, police murder and execution are not isolated events. You know, they're situations that's been going on in our communities historically since colonization, but most recently in the last 10, 15 years, the rise of the prison industrial complex. So I'm right now with Jesse Villarreal. Jesse, ¿qué vole?
How you doing?
All right, I got a few questions. We want to talk about your uncle, and I'm going to start with first, I want you to tell me a little bit about yourself and what got you involved in your early community activism before the events that led up to the murder of your uncle.
Okay, a little bit about myself. I work full-time, 40-plus hours. I go to school part-time at Evergreen College. Been going there for the past couple of years. Just trying to get my education, educate myself, and better my status. And yeah, so that's what I do. And when I get a chance, I try to do stuff within the community against police brutality in San Jose, especially because we experience a lot of that. And I started all this, I want to say, back in 1997 with Cop Watch. I was once the coordinator for San Jose Cop Watch in 1997, and we just did that because there was a lot of issues with the cops. There was the murder of Gustavo Soto Mesa by the county sheriffs back then, and we fought for the first open grand jury in San Jose history, and we got that open grand jury. And so since then, I've been doing stuff, and then I had stopped doing stuff for some years, and then my uncle was killed, and so that kind of pushed me into doing what I'm doing now. And as I told people before, I'll keep on fighting against these cops until there's no more breath air in my lungs. So, I mean,
Jesse, can you give the community and our listeners a recap or remind them what happened to your uncle on that event of February 17, 2004, which is going to be the fifth year anniversary of this event? You know, tell us what happened that evening or that day.
Okay, basically what happened, in a nutshell, I mean, you guys can probably get a lot of info off the internet by just searching the name Rudy Cardenas. But basically what happened is he drove by a house that was under surveillance by some parole agents, some state parole agents, who were looking for a certain individual. And my uncle, for some reason, slowed down a little bit by that particular house and kind of like looked at it. And we don't know why he slowed down. Maybe he was meeting some girl or meeting somebody. We don't know. And so he passed the house up one time, and I guess he drove by it again, and one of the parole agents called the parole office because they said that they had an informant about the guy that they were looking for, and this informant said that the guy they were looking for had driven a blue van, which was the van that my uncle was in, which was registered to my grandma. So as my uncle drove by, the undercovers started following him. And for some reason that we don't know and everybody's still guessing about, is he just started to speed up. And it just turned into a high-speed chase during downtown San Jose. And these state agents were joined by the Bureau of Narcotics agents, who were also at this house. And then they started chasing him down. And one of them was Michael Walker, who was once a Watsonville Police Department. And him and a couple other guys, Brian Link, Jason Lara, they were all involved with this. And so there was about three or four cars chasing my uncle. It was a high-speed chase through downtown. And at some point, my uncle went against the opposite direction on a one-way street, and he ditched the car, and he ran behind this this building. It's about 9 stories high building. It's a retirement home. And so he ran through an alleyway, he hopped the fence, and he kept on running. At the same time, Michael Walker parked his car, jumped out, and started chasing him. And so as my uncle hopped one fence, he took off running, and Michael Walker started shooting at him from by the building, from behind the fence. And he said because he felt my uncle was reaching for something, but my uncle was always running away from him. So Michael Walker said that he feared for his life, so that's why he took out the gun and he shot my uncle in the back, basically. And he hit the major artery that brings the blood down to our legs. It's a major artery that goes up through the middle of your back. And they said that he took a 1/4 inch out of the major artery. So my uncle was shot, he was bleeding on the ground. Sounds APD came in, they put handcuffs on him. They didn't let the fire engines or ambulance tend to him for at least anywhere from 9 to 11 minutes. Then they finally let them come in, and as they're driving him down to the hospital, he died on the way to the hospital. So we also found out that if there wouldn't have been that delay in treatment, that he probably could have survived and he could have made it.
But basically, they let him bleed to death, you're saying?
Yeah, well, he was handcuffed and he's on the ground and he's bleeding. Yeah, they didn't give him any medical attention for about those 11 minutes because they were, I guess, securing the area or covering up the evidence, I guess you can say. On the way to the hospital, my uncle died. So that's kind of what happened. And how we found out, the family, we just heard rumors, and because my uncle knew some people downtown area, and one of my other uncles lives downtown, and so the rumors just started going around, like, hey, you know, Rudy's been shot. So my aunt had called my mom and said, hey, you know, I heard he's been shot, and she was all hysterical. So my mom asked me to go to the hospital after work, and so I went down there to find out if he was alive or if he was dead, and they didn't want to tell me, but I had talked to one of the young nurses there, and she kind of I just told her, I said, you know, I want to know if he's dead or if he's alive, and then she just, like, put her head down and just shook her head. So she was telling me that he was dead, so I had to figure out a way to tell my mom, because she didn't know for sure, for definite, until I found out. And and that was kind of hard on me, because I had to be the one to break the news to her. I mean, no one else had to do it except for me. They have in Santa Clara County, they have something where they notify the next of kin, and this process was not followed during my uncle's case. No one notified us. I was the one that notified us. And so that's what happened, and we just started, you know, we wanted to fight for justice because we felt it was wrong, you know, to shoot somebody in the back who's always running away from you.
And your uncle was not armed with any type of firearms or anything?
No, they didn't find anything, no kind of firearms or weapons or nothing. There was a little bit of controversy during the trial because one cop had said he patted my uncle down and he found nothing in his pockets, but another cop later on said he patted him down and found a knife in his front pockets. So I don't know how that knife mysteriously got there, but between two cops patting him down, one of them found the knife, and we don't know if it was his or not, but it's just a little weird.
Even if it was planted in there, he never had it in his hand, so the officer was never under any type of danger or threat.
No, and especially hiding behind a 9-story building, I find that hard to believe that he was feeling any danger.
Mm. And what end up what happened to Michael Walker? Did he end up getting charged or?
Well, what happened is we had pushed for an open grand jury, and the case went before an open grand jury, which was open to the public, and it was a long grand jury. I want to say at least a week or two, and we packed the courtroom and we took him to the open grand jury, and the grand jury found him. I think it's called the charge is true. I guess that's what they say, if the charge is true or not. And then once from there, it goes to trial, or it doesn't go to trial. So they said that it was a true charge and it was rendered over for trial. Mm-hmm. And so then it went to a regular trial, like the one all of us would get. if we did something like this. And during the regular trial, he was charged with, I think it was manslaughter in the second degree. And he basically got off. And the reason why he got off, in my opinion, is because the DA's office did not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he was guilty of the charge that they were charging him with.
Why should they? The DA's always been in cooperation. I mean, it's the same department, being in cooperation with law enforcement. It is law enforcement. So, of course, it's going to be biased towards their own. So I think this, my personal opinion is that your uncle didn't get a fair trial.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I know that they work for the same, and, you know, the DA even came out and said it. You know, after this trial, my name is going to be mud with law enforcement. You know, so we know that we wouldn't have gotten a fair trial. But at the same time, I mean, the truth had to come out, and the truth did come out. You know, and with the truth comes justice, you know. And
so what did you and the community do to bring attention to the situation and to find justice for Rudy?
What we did is we did a lot of different events, activities. We did a car wash for donations, you know, to donate money. We organized protests and marches. We marched on to the county supervisors, board of supervisors, seeking justice. We talked to our local elected officials. We talked to our local city council person. We talked to the state officials. We talked to federal officials. Went to numerous politicians seeking justice. And we just kept doing different events and actions. And it was always brought out in the media. The media would always report about our events and actions, which brought to light what happened with him and made the public more aware of what was going on and what we were doing. So in that sense, we just try to keep it out there, just keep his memory out there, you know, like every month or something, we had done something on the anniversary of his killing.
And this is what it takes. It takes the community, the family, to get out there and make noise about the situation, or also just be buried. You know, the cop would just have been let off with probably not even any type of consequence. We just seen that in Salinas recently with a shooting of a young couple out there. And right now, the young couple is afraid to get involved because they were undocumented, right? So maybe this is—it's more likely that this situation is just going to be ignored by the media, and it is. It's not being pushed out there, and it's really important that the community doesn't allow this to happen. That they mobilize, that they demand that the media be responsible for bringing attention to the situation, to hold the law enforcement accountable for their actions. I just wanted to ask, who were your allies? What organizations got involved in this case of your Uncle Rudy, and what other organizations didn't? And what could have done better?
I want to say there wasn't too many organizations that were involved with us. It was basically us against the whole state of California, our family. Mm-hmm. There's only two organizations that I can say were there. Was Silicon Valley Debug, and then the Brown Berets from Watsonville. By letting me come down to Watsonville and talk to the Brown Berets and tell them what's going on, and them helping us with letting us know more information about Michael Walker, about the killer that he was, and the brutality that he did against the people in Watsonville. And then, of course, Silicon Valley Debug, who was there from the beginning, they were there at our vigils, and they helped us with giving us a place to speak our mind, you know, as far as putting it out there into the media. You know, they have a website, a radio show, and then they have a magazine. So we were able to get our message and our voices heard through them, you know, out to the community. And then not too long afterwards is when the more mainstream media had jumped on it, but mm-hmm. they were there from the beginning. And as far as like your bigger organizations, nobody really wanted to get involved with us. We didn't get no help from a lot of different ones. I know my mom had talked to the Mexican American Legal Defense Fund, MALDEF, and they didn't want to get involved because they said that drugs were involved.
Yeah.
And so a lot of organizations just weren't there, you know, and so
Well, that's because the DA used that as, or not the DA, but the attorneys and also the media use it as a way to stigmatize your uncle, and right, and make him look like he was the guilty one. They try to turn the focus around from Michael Walker back to your uncle, right?
Yes, and that's something that they've been doing time and time again. Whenever someone's killed by a cop, they always demonize the victim. Mm-hmm. And even if you see it now, you know, they never say the victim was killed by a taser. They say, oh, the suspect. It's always the suspect. And they did the same thing with my uncle. You know, he was always the suspect. You know, he was always this bad guy, you know, who's doing these bad things, these alleged bad things. And they never, you know, talked about the real person that he was. Mm-hmm. You know, and the real person that he was is he was a caring person who cared for his friends and his family and was there for them. And that's the part that the media didn't show, and that's the part that didn't come out. You know, all they kept on talking about was all the negativity, which is why a lot of people really didn't want to help us because of that.
He was a human, a fellow citizen, a community member that is allowed the same rights as everybody else, and what happened to him was unjust. But I want to ask you, how do you see the struggle of justice on behalf of Rudy compared to what's happening right now with Oscar Grant in Oakland, Annette Garcia in Riverside, and some of the other cases of police brutality and murder?
Well, I see the struggle as it's all the same. You know, Oscar Grant, Annette Garcia, you know, my uncle, you know, everybody, you know, it's a lot for a family to go through this pain, you know. And we all feel it, you know, we all feel for each other. And that's why I think I see the mobilization happening in Oakland behind Oscar Grant. And I would just like to see that turn into something more concrete, something more lasting, something that's going to be there. Because it's not just happening in Oakland or in, you know, in Riverside or in Fresno or in, you know, in Gilroy or in Watsonville. It's happening everywhere. You know, it's in San Jose, it's in San Francisco, you know, it's in Oakland, it's in Berkeley, it's in Sonoma, you know, I mean, you name it, we're all dealing with the same issue, and it's police terrorism. Mm-hmm. You know, it's us against them mentality, that's how they look at us. So I think we as a people need to look at it the same way. I mean, it is us against them.
Yeah, and one of the reasons is they've been given too much power and authority, right? And especially being that they're the forefront of the prison industrial complex, and the citizens, especially of impoverished minority communities, are the commodity for this. We're basically fueling the new economy of the prison industrial complex, because there's no jobs, the economy has gone to shit, basically, and we have been filling those spaces up. One more question. What is still being done on behalf of Rudy?
Well, I'm still active in fighting against this police brutality that we live through every day in San Jose. Downtown San Jose is like a police state. Mm-hmm. It's really not safe sometimes when you're brown and you're downtown. But I still do that, and I still keep fighting because, like I said, you know, I won't stop. You know, I won't stop until I'm gone from this earth. And until then, I'm going to keep on doing it. And I do it for my uncle. You know, I do it for everybody. I do it for my uncle. I do it for, you know, Noreen Salinas, whose dad was killed by San Jose PD with a taser. You know, I do it for all the families, you know. And you know, my uncle was supposed to be the last one. He wasn't supposed to be the first one that was killed. He was supposed to be the last one. There wasn't supposed to be any more that got killed after him. And since he's been killed, you know, we've seen Steve Salinas, you know, get killed. We see Oscar Grant now get killed. I mean, more and more people are getting killed by these cops. And people need to, like, wake up and realize that this is going on. And we need to, like, mobilize and step up and do something about it to change it.
Yeah, the community has to hold these departments accountable for their misdeeds and not allow it to continue. What do you think can be done? You know, you talked about trying to change some legislation around creating, you know, organizations in the community such as Cop Watch. Give us some of your ideas.
Yeah, I was thinking no more paid administrative leave. I mean, that's one of the first things that comes out of my mind, because whenever a cop kills somebody, they always go on paid administrative leave. And I think that automatic paid administrative leave needs to stop. I mean, because if there's an ongoing investigation, how can you just sit back and get paid for it, you know, when the family's suffering?
Yeah.
You know, because the cops aren't, they're not feeling it. They're not feeling the pain. They just, oh, I shot somebody, you know. And then they say that they feel bad about it afterwards and they go through these psychological problems. But I mean, if they feel so bad about it, they shouldn't have did it in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, they had no right to, you know, kill Oscar Grant the way they killed him. You know, they had no right to kill my uncle the way they did. You know, they had no right to kill Steve Salinas, you know, 10 cops almost jumping on one guy, you know. And it's just too much. And I really think that these cops need to fill in their pocketbook because that's what they understand. They understand money. Yeah. You know, recently our city council just voted to give Sally PD raises. Mm-hmm. But yet they're trying to cut programs now, so we're losing programs to pay more cops to what, to kill us, murder us, beat us, tase us, you know. And I just think that we really need to hit them in the pocketbook. Another thing we do in San Jose is we do a cop watch, you know, and that's where we go out and we basically videotape the police and what they're doing, just to make sure they're not doing anything that they shouldn't be doing, making sure that they're not, you know, harassing the youth. A lot of the time they're harassing the youth, especially on Cinco de Mayo, because a lot of youth come to San Jose from all over the place, and they're out there, you know, past curfew, whatnot, and right away, that's all we do. We just seen them stopping people left and right, asking them their ages and, you know, where they're from and all these different type of questions. So doing a cop watch just on a local community level, I think, is easier for a lot of people to do because you can, you know, you can just observe, you know, and that's what we do. We do that, and then we just stay active in the community and, you know, try to look out for each other.
You talked about your Sunday meetings at Debug. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we have a Debug on Sundays at 2:30. It's called our Sunday meetings or intake. It's a community intake. And basically, since in San Jose, we have an independent police auditor who is not functional. We have internal affairs who we know we can't trust. And we have no one else to go to for help, for answers. So what we did is we developed this what's called a Sunday meeting, and where different individuals from the community who've had problems with police come to the meeting, and we talk about it, and we try to help them get answers by either supporting them in court or helping them with researching their cases or looking up case law or doing different things, so then they know what they can and can't do. We help them file what's called a Marsden motion, which I just learned about, and that's where you can basically get rid of your lawyer who's appointed to you because he's not representing you effectively. And so we just find different ways and things how to help people out, because people need help, as some people know, and not everybody knows their rights, and we just try to be there for people just to support them.
If people want to get involved or find out more information about the events, what happened to your uncle, Rudy Cardenas, and other organizing efforts in San Jose, where could they plug into? Is there a website? Or?
We don't have a website up for my uncle, but if you were to search his name, you would probably find a lot of information, because there's still a lot out there as far as like old newspaper stuff or old stuff about the case. Silicon Valley Debug, you can check that website. There's always stuff on there. It's a good website. It has a lot of different things on there for the youth. It's a open space for people to write stories. If you want to write your own story, poems, pictures, whatever, there's a lot of things going on there. And so that's what I could say as far as websites and stuff to check out. The San Jose Cop Watch, we haven't gotten a website up yet. We're still trying to organize a little bit more and get things a little bit more refined. So right now things are kind of still in the process, and so we don't have anything like that concrete yet.
So if anybody wanted to get in contact with you to help you in that process, I think they could just contact you at Debug, or you can send them an email.
Yeah, you can send an email to Silicon Valley Debug. I don't have the email address with me right now, but if you go to the website, there's a link on there where it says contact us, and you know, you can email me through there or call there and leave a message for me there. But it's just all about community. It's all about, you know, what you can do in your community to make a change happen. You know, and for us, we try to do a cop watch because we feel that, you know, there's just a lot of stuff going on downtown San Jose. Right now there's a huge number of Latinos who are being arrested. Mm-hmm. For drunk in public. and they're not given a breathalyzer or nothing. They're just taken in, charged of drunken public, convicted, and got a case. And so there's been a high number of those cases happening, which has been happening for a long time, but now all of a sudden, because it came on the front page of the Mercury News, it's gotten city council's attention. So now they have created a small commission, I guess you can call it, of people from the community to try to figure out a way to remedy this situation. But like I said, to me, it's just more of the same targeting of youth of color. That's what I see. And that's why I say, you know, it just depends on your community and what you can do to help change come.
And I thought of one more thing to say or ask you. Michael Walker had a long history of abuse in Watsonville. You know, there was constant reports. You could look that up in the record the records of the Watsonville Police Department. There was a complaint about him breaking a leg of a young female that was taken into custody by him. Since he's been found not guilty of the murder of your uncle, do you know what he's been up to? Do you have any idea what Michael Walker is continuing to do in the community?
I'm not sure 100%, but I think he might have his own business now in Gilroy. I have to relook up the name, but I think he's still around. He's not working for the Department of Justice anymore, but I feel that he's still around. Maybe, like I said, possibly in Gilroy. I would have to double check on that. But yeah, I mean, other than that, we haven't really heard too much or seen too much of him. But I wouldn't imagine that he would not be far from law enforcement.
Well, you've been hit. Listen to Brown Beret Radio. I'm interviewing Jesse Villarreal, the nephew of Rudy Cardenas. This is the fifth anniversary, this February 17th, 2004, was a date that Rudy Cardenas was killed by Michael Walker, who worked for the Department of Justice. Michael Walker was a former Watsonville police officer. So we wanted to bring attention to the situation, especially with the recent killings of young people like Oscar Grant, Annette Garcia, Roberto Lopez, and also this other cases of police brutality. Jesse, do you have any final words for our listeners?
Yeah, I would just like to say stay strong and keep your head up and just keep going. Just keep going, because no matter what, the truth has to come out, and the truth and justice cannot be denied. Unless we let it be denied. But other than that, we have to just keep fighting. We just have to look out for each other and be there for each other and you know, unify and fight against this this oppression and this terrorism, because that's what it is. It's just homegrown terrorism, and we just need to, you know, just keep on fighting, stay strong, and like I said, fight for the truth, because the truth has to come out.
All right, just want to thank you, Jesse.
Okay, you're welcome. All right.